Welcome to MCBI's 60 Mark, a podcast for curious thinkers.
Welcome everyone, it's Marina from MCBI and I'm delighted to welcome you back to the 2019 MCBI 60 Mock podcast series. I'm very happy to say I'm joined here by Anthony Still, who has just come off the 60 Mock stage upstairs in Featherstone after delivering a fantastic session.
Thank you.
For our 60 Mockers. It was, I was holding my breath and putting my hand up and getting involved, so I thank you. We're going to have a great time this morning and get to know about you and learn a bit about what it was that you delivered up there that had the crowd enthralled. So, Anthony, we've known each other for, 15 years?
I think it's 15.
Let's say 15.
We worked together a long time ago. In fact, I think you were my leader.
Really?
Yes. Well, at least anyway, I think I had to do what you told me. So.
I was your leader,
yeah,
really.
I
wow.
Think so.
You can tell how effective I am at leadership if I'm more into that collegiate, let's all work together approach. But you have had an extraordinary career. And I know certainly when we worked together, I was incredibly impressed with your intelligence, your thoughtfulness, your insight. But our little time was only a little segment of your career. And for the listeners, we would love to hear a bit more about your career and how on earth you ended up here at Featherstone down in the basement.
It's scary for me to think about how long I've actually been working for. And I think calling it a career is probably it's been more of an accident than a career. There wasn't any great plan to do what I was doing. But if I wanted to summarise the things that I enjoyed the most out of my career, it's been the ability to interact with lots of intelligent people and learn heaps of things from them about how you improve, whether you're improving yourself, whether you're improving staff, whether you're improving processes, customer experience, just seeing a benchmark level or a baseline level of activity and then working out how am I going to improve that. And that's probably been the thread or the core of the last 15 or 20 years of what I've been doing in working. So the last 9 years I've been in executive roles in state government, working with the superannuation arm, and that's given me the opportunity to improve processes, improve customer experiences, as well as improve team and personal cultures. Yeah. And that's been really exciting roles there. Prior to that, I worked with mainly financial services, but in outsourced contracts where, again, customer service was the critical component of it, mostly delivered by process and IT services. Mm. And then how you go around improving those to make it easier, cheaper, faster, but at the same time having the human element. Mm. Another of our colleagues, Jenna Bannister, who many people will be aware of, made it very clear to me very early on, and she had a little bit of a mentoring role for me, that we need to trust the people who are doing the work. They really do know what's going on, and if we respect that knowledge, then we can really make good management decisions. Mm. Because we're not doing it out of the top of our own heads. We're using everybody's brains that's involved in the process.
Yeah. She's an amazing woman, and I think she's a very good example of, you know, we did all work together many years ago, but I would say Janet was probably our informal leader, because I think she gave me the same advice. You know,
okay.
I may have had the positional, you know, I was wanting to front up, but this idea, I know that she put into me as well, that the frontline people, they know what they're doing, and as re-engineers or change agents, we need to listen and take their cues.
That's right.
So, good. And JB, if you're listening, yes, you have a little fan club here. But let's get on to the 60 mocks here at that session you just went through. And, you know, what we have about 30 people there, came out Friday morning.
That was fantastic.
It was good. And you had Tom Cruise. You had Tom Cruise come along as well.
Yes. I don't know what Tom has really to do with this particular subject, but it was a bit of fun weaving him in.
So could you just briefly explain for the listeners what it was that the topic and the story you sort of took us through?
Sure. So the topic was around how the psychological contract can break and cause conflict, and how that interrupts the ability to build effective teams. I think that's probably the best way to summarise it. The point at the core is to recognise that whilst we might have an employment contract, which officially defines the way that we are paid for the work that we do and all of the terms and conditions, that there's a whole set of underwater expectations that are shared between an employer and an employee. And because they're not written down, they're not fixed, They vary, they change over time. And if they're not actually exposed or talked about between employers and employees and leaders, then we really lose an opportunity to cement a strong working relationship and all the value that's possible there in that working relationship. So it's really about sort of defining what is that psychological contract and what are the type of elements that are included in it. Your official contract has pay and conditions, of course, but the psychological...
When you say the contract, it's like a bit of paper you get when you sign up for a job and it says, right. You know, section 9 says you're entitled to 10 days sick leave, et cetera.
Right.
So that's
the official written contract.
Yeah.
And really the psychological contract is psychological. It's not on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes things like an employee might expect respect from his leader. He might expect a level of flexibility. He might expect opportunities for growth. He would expect a level of security in the workplace. All these things are not necessarily written down, but they'll be expectations and they will vary by individual.
Mm.
From an employer perspective, they might expect a level of loyalty. They might expect the best ideas that the employee can bring, even though that wouldn't be specified in the contract, in the written contract. So these expectations are there. We shouldn't shy away from the fact that they're there, and if we all acknowledge that they're there and speak of them, we get our expectations in alignment.
Mm.
So if we have expectations out of alignment, that's where your conflict in a team comes about.
Yeah.
So this is an underlying part of interrelationships between people in the workplace.
So it's a very complex thing, isn't it? Because, I mean, I imagine my expectations of work is really different to yours or the person who sits next to me. And the employers, as we're sort of referring them to,
yep.
They have to try to interpret all of those different expectations, and it's unwritten, you know, sort of, and
that's
it varies
right.
And it changes,
yep.
And then deliver on them. And I imagine if we don't deliver on them, we could end up with lack of, you know, support, engagement, or even a decline in morale.
Yes.
What are your thoughts around that?
No, totally. And what you end up with is you don't get that engagement of the staff that you're really looking for, or the engagement of individuals. And we talk about ourselves. We know if we're in an environment where we don't feel respected, our ability to contribute is reduced. If we don't think we're in a safe environment, we're going to be focused on our safety rather than on what's the best we could contribute and therefore enjoy ourselves the most, because we're actually contributing things of high value.
Mm.
So it's a really important thing, and as you say, there is a level of complexity, and from a leadership perspective, that complexity grows as we add diversity into the mix, because we get all manner of people now in a workplace, in a team that might be there to produce the work that's required. And the more diverse that workforce, the more differing expectations there can be amongst all the individuals.
Mm.
So the leader needs to be aware of that. But there are some really simple things that can be done to make what sounds very complicated much more effective and much simpler.
Oh, tell us.
Yeah.
We like simple.
Well, it is. It's none of them are really rocket science. People will expect these things, but when they're well done, they make a significant difference. Fundamentally, at core, if we trust each other, we are more willing to express our expectations to each other because we don't feel there's any danger in doing so.
Mm.
So creating an environment of trust in a workplace, in a team, amongst individuals is a fundamental practice of leadership, of strong leadership, and that helps create that environment in which expectations can be shared and changed over time without there being conflict.
Mm.
And creating an environment of trust might sound a little bit theoretical, but it actually can be done with some very easy steps, day-to-day practices that are not too difficult at all.
What types of things?
So as an example, one of the things that we really love to have for ourselves individually is to be recognised.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like a really simple thing.
No, I do. I never get recognised.
You never get recognised. You're doing a great job, Maureen.
Thanks.
You do a great job. So we got recognising excellence. Yeah, I understand. But recognising excellence, everybody would understand how valuable that is for themselves. If we can generate in a team the ability for the team to recognise individuals in a public way, that's unplanned, so it's not overly scripted and therefore feels real, then that really introduces trust amongst the team. Everybody's much more able to converse, not just about the positives, but also about things that mightn't be going so well. And so then you create that environment that doesn't allow things to fester.
Imagine it has to be quite authentic, though, because, I mean, I've been guilty of it. I have David Brent moments where I'm like, yay, you know, and because it almost feels like in the busyness of leadership, like, you know, I've got to praise someone, and yes. I know that I haven't been present, yep. and I imagine lots of people are out there who are going, yeah, it sounds great to praise people, but yep. one, what if there's nothing to praise? You know, that's a bit harsh, but what if there isn't? You don't want to come off being inauthentic either, because I imagine that's harder to recover from.
Right. So, yes, if you've got your Friday 9:15 calendar booking to, say, respect somebody by open praise, mm-hmm. then that's probably going to come across as a little bit inauthentic, because everyone can sit there watch by you that you're going to come out at 9:15 and say something positive about somebody. And, well, it's clearly been really hard to find the thing to say. That's going to be obvious.
Yeah.
But in most cases, if you've got a cohesive team, somebody will have been helping somebody. Somebody will have been careful of somebody else's concerns.
Yeah.
Everybody's lives have difficulties from time to time, and people have worked through that and still contributed in a positive way. By calling out those sort of things, that helps people recognise you as an authentic leader yeah. that actually cares about the individuals that you're working with,
yeah.
and then you can give the praise on the basis of that.
Yeah.
But if
yeah.
you can generate it so that it comes from a colleague rather than directly from you as a leader, you create a culture in which people can openly praise each other and the work that's done,
yeah.
that just sort of triples the effect. It's yeah. really important.
It is. It's that real bonding and right. the sort of connection. Now, one of the things I was fascinated with was this idea of leadership as a service. I've never heard that before, and I love it. Rather than the servant leader,
yes.
I always had a few issues with that.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like being of service, but I love this idea of leadership as a service. Can you expand a bit more on that?
Sure. The purpose of a leader is to enable a team or a group to achieve more than the sum of its parts. Otherwise, you wouldn't need the leader. The team would just produce the sum of its parts and it could do that. So the leader has to be able to help the team produce more than what it could otherwise do. And I don't mean by whipping them or any of those sort of negative connotations.
It's mental note, no whipping.
No whipping, definitely no whipping. But it's more about encouraging the team to take strength and leverage each other to be able to produce more than they could individually. That's the service of leadership.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if we consider that leadership is a service that we offer to our team to help them be better, service always has customers. Mm. You don't produce a service for nobody to buy. There's always customers to your service. So if you think of leadership as a service, then the team is the customers or are the customers of your service. There's no company still operating with poor customer satisfaction over a long period of time if they don't give good service.
Telstra. Oh, sorry, did I say that? No.
Who are we sponsored by? Careful. Perhaps, but they've got a great network.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah,
the service
yeah,
when you call isn't
ads,
so good, but the fundamental service that you need might be the network rather than...
We're all prisoner customers.
True, there's a bit of that. But if we consider that our customers are our staff... When was the last time we surveyed them to find out what they thought of our service of leadership? Are we actually providing the service that they need?
Mm.
And that requires us to have conversation with them. You can do it by staff satisfaction surveys and things like that. That will give you pointers only to the areas that you might want to focus on.
Mm.
But in discussion with your teams individually, the question can be, how can I help you perform your role better? How can I help the team perform the role better? It does a couple of things. It demonstrates humility as in your role of leadership. You're not mm-hmm. taking authority, but you're there to help that team produce the best it can, which will then give a great deal of pride to the individuals, make them feel satisfied about what they're doing, and they'll recognise that you're actually there to help, not to hinder, which unfortunately can be how you feel sometimes about a leader.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what we mean by leadership as a service.
I love it. I love this idea. We might actually call your podcast the... It's a bit... a bit snappier than Tom Cruise and stuff.
That's a very long title.
Yeah. We'll get him in the other way. All right, we're coming to the end of our time together. Can you believe that?
Go quickly.
And we are... So a couple of... as we leave, a piece of advice that you could give to your younger self on how to run a great career or a great professional, you know, experience, what would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself to be more personally open and share more of my personal real life with staff or with people as I go around. I tend to be a little too private.
Mm-hmm.
That allows then an opening for trust. Yeah. And I think that's probably the reason why I'd make that, to say, let's be open about who we are, share that with people, because that will enable people then to trust you in whatever role it is you might be performing, and leverage off each other's strengths. I've learned that very little is performed by the strength of one person. And so when we work in a team environment, either as a team member or in a leadership position, respect the number of brains that are around. You know, the world's most complex calculating device or computing device in the world, we've all got one. And all of us have been informed by our own life experiences, enormous amounts to be learned by sharing that from each other.
Yeah.
And I think that goes to creating great work environments where there's a lot of respect and harmony.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. I love that. And our brain is probably the best calculator around. It always annoys me when they make a statement, they say, our phones have more computing power than the computers that sent man to the moon. I think that's not true, because there are actually a whole lot of computers sitting around in human heads.
That's right.
Who actually contributed to the calcs.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. It's been a wonderful time to get to know you, Anthony, and to learn a bit more about this incredibly, I think, really important topic for us. It's the Year of Humanity over at MCBI. But I think this is a bigger message for everyone who's trying to build great teams. You're not quite off the hook yet. We've got four really quick questions as we say goodbye to you. So, favourite ice cream?
When you put boysenberry ripple on top of choc mint, it's the flavour right
That'd
in the middle.
Complicated.
No one else likes it.
All right, beer or wine?
Wine.
Wine, really? Just like that. Wow. Okay. Do you believe in horoscopes?
I enjoy reading them.
Do you believe in them?
No.
What are you?
Not at all.
You'd be a Virgo.
Libran.
Yeah, you'd have to be.
Libran.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. All right. And just a last one. Did we actually visit the moon?
I believe so.
On that intellectual moment. Thank you so much for 60 Mock today. Thank you for coming down to our podcast, and I just continue to enjoy working with you.
Thanks,
Anthony.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening in today. We look forward to you joining us next time.